You're listening to New Retirement Radio, brought to you by the team at Prout Financial Design.
Hello, I'm your host, Certified Financial Planner Dennis Prout.
I'm Heidi Cartwright, Financial Advisor and RICP.
Advisors associated with Prout Financial Design may be either 1. Registered representatives with and securities offered through LPL Financial, member FINRA SIPC, and investment advisor representatives of Integrated Partners, a registered investment advisor, or 2. Solely investment advisor representatives of Integrated Partners, a registered investment advisor and not affiliated with LPL Financial. Investment advice offered through Integrated Partners, a registered investment advisor. Integrated Partners and Prout Financial Design are separate entities from LPL Financial. Dennis Prout and Nathan Prout are solely investment advisor representatives of Integrated Partners and are not affiliated with LPL Financial. The opinions voiced in this show program are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. To determine which strategies or investments may be suitable for you, consult the appropriately qualified professional before making a decision.
WTCM News Talk 580 on a Thursday. Good morning, everybody. It's 10:08, time for New Retirement Radio with Prout Financial Design, starring Mr. Dennis Prout. Good morning, sir.
We interrupt our normally scheduled news program or news watching to join the radio show, given the world that we live in. What a wild world. Man alive, it is crazy. Can we turn down the music, please? Thank you.
You have to talk over that.
It's the intro.
Shut it off there. Yeah, we've got a lot going on today. We're talking about tariffs, about the markets. Actually, we've got a really good article about tariffs from Capital Group, American Funds. I think you'll find interesting, given all the noise going on about tariffs. We'll talk about what they are, how they work, and their actual purpose. There's actually a purpose, ain't Heidi Cartwright. Good morning.
Good morning. It's sort of like a tariff 101 little article. So it'll help us navigate all this information.
Yes. And if you do have questions of a financial nature that you'd like us to try to give a shot at, our phone number, if you would, Ron, is...
You can call in or you can text a question or comment to 231 area code 947-0023. That's 947-0023.
Thank you, Ron.
Yes.
Just that simple, eh? And joining us, too, over there, Beth Shire.
Good morning.
Good morning, our own director of marketing.
Yes, sir.
All right, we've got some time here to talk about financial stuff. So let's navigate chaos or control. I think a lot of us are wondering about that. What does this mean, and how might we respond? Our own economist coined it well, I thought. He said Donald Trump scored a coup with what he was able to accomplish with this negotiating with foreign countries. Apparently there are 15 right now, I heard, on the way here. And by the way, if you listen to the show on Saturday, it is a rebroadcast, and a lot of this information may be old by then. To
Could
just
be
put
totally
it simply,
different by then.
I mean, I guess because things are changing so quickly, but we know that foreign countries are actively negotiating with the Trump administration, so they've got 90 days, in essence, to renegotiate their trade deals with these United States. Right now, we've got a locked-in 10% tariff on foreign countries, and the market, for sure, as we're already seeing today, what is it, down 900, 800, 900 or so?
Yeah.
That's, of course, as of April 10th. In terms of the volatility, we expect a lot more of it, but generally, what are we seeing? Those who are veterans, this is what my observation is, based on my conversations with them, they're in their buying at this point. As you would expect, when they get these kind of discounts in the markets, although they would expect, perhaps, that we'll test these lows that we've seen. The market's down, depending on the S&P and or the Dow, about 18 to 19% from their highs.
Oh.
Pretty significant dollar amounts. But it also shows the importance of diversification when you're looking at these portfolios. And then the other part of it is we're all trying to save for something. We're trying to save for something. Some people would call it retirement. Some are calling it, we'd like to pass some of it on to the kids, the children, and or our spouses. given that we don't live as long as we might want to. So there are a lot of purposes we're thinking about, but how do we overcome this, and how do we think about it? Well, it's a negotiating tactic. It's been somewhat probably to the outside observer, Harry Carey, if you will. It's been a wild show to watch. So the April 3rd news headline, the stock market today, Dow plunged 2,200 points in one day. Obviously, yesterday it was up almost 3,000 points. It was the worst week last week for world stocks since March 2020 during the COVID decline. Some of this is actually mirrored or looked very similar to the decline during the COVID scare. So that part is helpful to see how much April came up in terms of stock market returns. April in that year was the best month we'd seen in 30 years. The market was down about 24% or so for the months of February and March during that period of time, given the uncertainty of all of that. So we have a few quotes here I thought was really helpful. China is in essence now isolated in terms of their position. And so what I'm hearing is that as these other countries negotiate and make these agreements with these United States, China will probably feel the pressure, even greater pressure than it's currently feeling now, and most likely will fall in line. Why did Trump change his mind? Everyone is asking this. Could it have been Maria's interview with Jamie Dimon that happened the day that he made that change? Could it have been his discussions with Scott Bessent, his Treasury Secretary, over the weekend? We don't know. I would guess it was several of these discussions. Upwards of 50 to 60 business leaders from around the United States apparently were talking to Susan Wiles, his chief of staff. So it's amazing just to try to keep track of all of this. The bottom line is, what can you do? Obviously, we can't do anything about this. We can watch and wonder and understand that the markets are a live thing. They respond to threats of increased cost, of a possible recession, of other issues related to trade and our relationships abroad, including China. Bottom line is the Chinese economy is in really rough shape. I think, given what I've heard, that they are going to come to the negotiating table. They have to figure out how to do that. They have a very different view of the world, of course, and of negotiating than what we do. So a part of it will be the Trump's administration ability to understand China's negotiating tactics. But we think they will come to the table. Do I think, and I'm looking at this from rose-colored glasses, probably partially. I mean, part of this is, what news do you believe in the end? That makes it as difficult as anything, given the shots being taken back and forth about all the different pieces and parts going on. Bottom line is, if you can maintain your head when everyone else is losing theirs, you're going to tend to do better. What does Warren Buffett say about this? He said about the market declines about this in the past. When you can buy the best economy in the world at a discount, jump in. And the other part of that is maybe do that over some time. But these United States of America still is the best economy in the world, in spite of what you hear about treasury notes, T-bills, interest rates, the stock market, and all the rest. We have a great environment to continue to grow into the future. And in spite of all the politics going on and the noise, which a lot of it I can't even say because it's so bombastic, if you will. But no, in the end, if you can, whether you're dollar cost averaging in and you're able to invest through the decline as well as ride it up, patience tends to reward those who are willing to stick with a program and understand that other professionals they see things on sale. They look at things totally differently than what you and I do in terms of some of the negativity. The VIX is a great example of that. Fear amongst investors, skyrocketed. What do market advisors and prognosticators look at with that? They look at that as an opportunity. Because whenever that fear level, that fear index skyrockets, it's generally, you guessed it, a time to go in there and or stick with your guns.
VIX is the volatility index.
Yes.
And that measures
it's
like
a fear index.
They poll investors and say, how scared are you?
Yes, exactly. What is your
a little
fear?
Bit, a
what
lot.
Is your what is your level of fear?
Buy when the blood is running in the streets, when market timers are bearish, it's time to be bullish, which means you're generally positive and then they're buying. So all of these stats, I mean, I've got a lot of them here with these indicators, which, you know, we can only go into some degree of detail here on the radio show, but just let it be known or stick with us if you can. Try to stick with the program. If you do have questions of a financial nature where you want to come in and see someone, call our office, 231-947-3992. We're happy to speak with clients and others who may have questions, too, about how should I respond to this? What's a logical,
prudent
way to approach this? I had to think of calming words there and so everything else going on.
What do you tell? I mean, I've had text questions and you comments and questions all over. What do you tell a retired person or couple? They're already retired. They're already leaning into that retirement account they built up, and they've seen it drop 10 to 30, 40%, whatever their loss. What do you say to them?
Well, it's going to depend on how they've invested. Many clients we're talking to are not nearly down as much as the market. Now, those who've accepted and wanted to be aggressive, if you will, and we don't have a lot of those clients, are seeing these kinds of declines, but they tend to be younger. They tend to be. But those who've stayed diversified, it's amazing how well they've done in spite of the declines. So it depends on where you're at. If you've got money set aside, which we constantly are talking to clients about this, do you have spending accounts that are not tied to the stock market where you can draw your income? That is a significant strategy to be able to weather these kinds of declines. Because then you can let the rest of it ride and let those money managers get in there and do what they're supposed to do, which, you know, they're buying the companies that they see as valued. I can't even name them here on the show, but we all know their names, which I won't state.
Which we won't say.
Thank you, compliance. But they are there, many of them large. Most of them, you'll recognize their names. They've come down significantly in price. Many money managers are, as Warren Buffett says, buying them at a discount now. They are doing that. It's where the rubber hits the road. So I've seen it enough. I remember back in 1987 when the market was down significantly on what they called Black Monday in that day. I actually printed the article off from the Federal Reserve. That was fascinating to look at on Monday, and it was encouraging. Because the market ended that year where it started that year. And that's exactly as John Templeton said it would, which at the time that he said that, I thought, oh, my gosh, John, I can't believe you're saying that. I was young in the industry. I was 2 years into it at that point. But it's amazing to watch these kinds of declines. They usually are overdone and overwrought with worry and negative news. The news pounces on this stuff. Please take the news with a grain of salt when it comes down to this, okay?
Just looking at Black Monday, 1987, I worked with Colleen. We were young news pups at the time. I remember that. But you know what? It had no impact on my life. I had no worry or anything at that age. It was like, well, something happened on the market today. 22-point drop.
In 22%. Yeah. Now, that'd be about 10,000 points on the Dow today. We stood around the screens, the financial group out in Sutton's Bay, and I remember like it was yesterday, I think it was FNN, those small screens we were watching, that market just plummeted throughout the day. And nothing, of course, anybody could do about it. And it was relatively, you know, non-substantial news, according to I think it was the deficit, the foreign deficit was higher than they had expected. And there was one other relatively negative report. But the market had gotten overpriced, and it got repriced really quickly. The issues today, the market probably needed an excuse to come down because it was overpriced according to a lot of metrics. That excuse happened to be Donald Trump, but he stood there, in essence, amazingly strong to my view. So, guy's got a backbone. He's got a spine that's significant in terms of negotiating. So far, it's working to a certain degree. We'll see what happens next. Do we have any questions, Ron? Are we kind of bereft of that today? Where are we there, huh?
Let's check that out there.
Man, we've got so much going on. So much happening.
What is the buzz about the great gain of 2025 and altcoins?
Any ideas?
Crickets.
Yeah.
How difficult is it to start Social Security benefits at 64 or 65 to ride out this market drop, not sell stocks at a loss, then stop the benefits a year later and repay Social Security the money you received, then restart benefits at a later date, say at age 70,
sort of
like a do-over or a financial mulligan?
Which you can do, but oh my gosh, I have heard from others in terms of administratively getting that done, especially these days, I would say would be a relatively risky thing to attempt. However, if you're thinking of doing that, I'd go to the local Social Security office and just have a talk with them about the advisability of doing that and how they would do it and what that would look like, because you've got to get that money back in. And it's proper crediting and all the rest. So you can do that for 1 year, but that's the max. And given the world in which we live, I don't know that I would attempt that. You'd want to be careful about that one.
That assumes everything goes smoothly.
Exactly.
With all the paperwork and starting things and stopping things, and that you remember to do it and you remember the right order. And it just puts a lot of pressure on the situation.
You know, we should have Bob Simpson in next week to talk about that question.
Yeah.
Should we do that?
Put that on the list for Bob.
Funny you mention that.
Yeah, okay. So Bob Simpson will be in from the Social Security Administration, a now retiree.
Yes.
Talking about those questions and others. Dennis, you sound like an advertisement. I believe it. I understand. I am indeed. For next week's show, Thursday.
And what
at 10.
This is a text, but I've heard this a few times this week. Pigs get fat, hogs get slaughtered, I think is what they meant to write here. Pigs get fat, hogs get slaughtered in relation to stock market. What's that mean?
Well, it means that if you're being too greedy and you're riding things too much to the tilt, if you will, or too much to the hilt, I think is the proper way to say that, you may get really handed to it. No one anticipated the tariffs that came in, to be sure. I mean, the shock and awe, if you will, at the level of the tariffs and where he came in at, surprised everyone. I did not see one Chase sent out a newsletter 52 pages long over the weekend to try to quieten, if you will, their own clients. Mm. So this surprised everyone. But, you know, you want to be diversified. I'll just leave it at that. It's difficult to say, but don't try to get every last dollar out of your trading status or your trading skills. Understand that this thing goes up and down. How's that?
One more text, just a comment.
Yes, sir.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to add. Can you see that, Beth?
No, I don't have that glass.
Okay. I'll read it. If the markets are rattling you, just listen to Dennis's calm voice and you'll be okay.
There you go.
You'll be okay.
Hi there, my name is Dennis. No, I've, speaking for what I said to the staff on Tuesday morning, I said, it's not my normal thing to beg clients, but what I said on Tuesday morning was this, and this is before we knew anything about this tariff thing. at our staff meeting. I said, if I could beg clients right now to do anything for those who are okay with the risk and can handle this sort of thing, I have to say this for compliance. I didn't say this in our meeting. It would be to add to your positions at these prices because you're getting a significant discount. Now, at the same time, I would say we may see those discounts come back at the same time. If we do see it again, for those that can and weather this sort of thing, buy at a discount when you're able, judiciously, if you will. Okay? That's as much as I can say on this radio. All right, Heidi, talking about tariffs, let's talk about that, shall we?
Yes. So
what are they and what do they do and their purpose?
Today I brought an article that came to us through Capital Group, and it is written by Jared Franz and Robert Lind. These are two PhD economists from Oxford and Northwestern University. And they, it talks about the tariffs and understanding them. So I thought it might be good for all of us to just go over it a little bit and maybe give us a little insight and some understanding on what's going on out there. So recently, Trump unveiled a 10% tariff that will apply to most countries and imposed harsher rates on a long list of trading partners, including China, the European Union, and Japan. The expansive measures which follow tariffs on autos, aluminum, steel were announced in March, and it roiled markets, raised the prospect of a global trade war. The S&P 500 index plummeted 4.84% on April 3rd, 2025, extending year-to-date losses. And that's the date of that headline that you read earlier, Dennis. But in the article, they say, remember, we are in the early days of Trump 2.0, and the ultimate outcome may differ from the initial headlines. There likely will be more tariff turbulence throughout Trump's presidency. So the first question that they deal with is, they go to the basics. So what are tariffs, and how are they used out there in the economy? So tariffs are essentially taxes on goods imported from other countries. They are used to help to protect domestic producers from foreign competition, among other purposes. So what they did in this article is they identified four motivations for using tariffs. One is called decoupling. This is where you shift supply chains and reduce reliance on certain countries. And the example they use here is China. We import so much from China. All of us know this. When you go to the store, you look where it's made. There are so many products out there that we buy that come from China. Another use is to rebalance. It's rebalancing, reduce trade deficits, and boost domestic production. So move some production back to the U.S., buying U.S. products, having something that U.S. producers can compete on a price basis with what we're importing.
A good idea, or a good example of that, rather, would be Taiwan Semiconductor investing $100 billion in production plants here in these United States. Yes.
Another use is negotiating, using the tariffs for economic pressure to achieve policy outcomes. So there may be another end result that they're going for, and they're using tariffs as a influence on those negotiations. And then a fourth use is funding, to generate revenue to fund budget promises. So there's more than one reason to have a tariff or to use a tariff. Our base case is that the United States can weather changes to trade policies. Through higher tariffs, they would likely dampen economic activity and raise import prices. The U.S. has advantages of size, economic resilience, and consumers that have money to spend. Businesses have also ramped up investments in the U.S., both domestically and abroad, from companies eager to maintain access to the world's largest economy. And this also goes back to what you said earlier. We do have the largest economy. We do have a lot that goes through our country, and we're very strong relatively in the world to anyone else. So they continue on in the article and they say, however, the ambiguity caused by shifting trade policies has already affected business and consumer confidence with potential negative consequences for the U.S. economy and markets. So then we move on to their second question, which is, why is the U.S. trade deficit so high?
Yeah, just to go back on your first point, the market hates uncertainty, as all of us do. I mean, we don't like uncertainty, and that's what this is causing, significant amount of uncertainty in what the actual pricing is going to be. It makes it much more difficult for companies to plan.
Right, and especially the market, which is always looking forward. What's the next thing? What's going to happen next?
Yes.
And, you know, they think a certain thing's going to happen, but in this environment, when things happen so quickly and things happen unexpectedly, that causes that volatility that we see. People are unsettled.
Yeah, an investment team that we were talking to yesterday were referring to the S&P 500 as looking like a meme stock, the way it was gyrating all over the place.
Yes. So let's get back to, why is the U.S. trade deficit so high? If there's one number to know about tariff, it's the U.S. trade deficit for goods. That figure hit $1.1 trillion in 2024 as Americans bought imported products and a strong U.S. dollar weighed on exports. The U.S. has run a trade deficit every year since which decade, Dennis?
The decade maybe of the, I was going to say the 80s, but your notes say they're the 70s, eh?
That's right. So that's a long time to run a deficit.
Yeah. That was before some of us were born, Ron.
Yeah. I was just thinking that.
Yeah.
Okay. So economists note that the high trade deficit may be a sign of U.S. economic strength, indicating consumers are buying. Other countries rely on global trade far more than the United States, and the administration aims to leverage America's economic position as a tool to achieve a more balanced relationship with its trading partners.
Balanced relationships. That's what we're all looking for, Ron.
Yeah.
So still, the U.S. runs the world's largest current account deficit, which is the counterpart of huge foreign capital inflows into the United States. If the U.S. wants to reduce its deficit, it will likely mean smaller capital inflows and a weaker dollar. Tariffs may represent a pivot to an isolationist leaning policy that could have long-term ramifications for investment portfolios.
That is a mouthful. Isolationist.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well,
no
every
kidding.
Once in a while you hit a word where you're like, I can't even get this out.
Exactly.
So moving on to our next question, here's a good one. Do tariffs cause inflation? Well, the short answer is yes, but how it plays out is more complex. And that's usually the story. You have an answer, but it's complicated. So
in the long term, all this say tariffs are not a good idea. They're not a good idea for the economy, period. You want a free and open trade environment. However, if it's used as a negotiating tool, of course, in the right way, and it's more even, Steven, if you will, between the trading partners, in essence, I'm all about that.
Is it difficult, though, like if we have very high environmental regulations and wage regulations and other countries don't, then it does puts us, U.S., at a disadvantage?
It puts us at a distinct disadvantage. Yeah. That's exactly right. So given our own requirements, regulations, if they're causing that much of an increase in cost, sometimes those are going to have to be taken into account. But what's interesting is if those can be removed, as they're currently discussing on California, removing a lot of those requirements for building new homes. Mm. All of a sudden, the politicians are saying, yeah, we have to do something about this. We have to remove some of these roadblocks to people building houses. That's just one easy example.
Because the burden gets so heavy that you can't get a profit from making that product, so you just leave the industry or something.
Those companies shut down and or they go elsewhere. Yeah. It is a global economy.
Mm-hmm.
But I repeat myself. Go ahead, Heidi.
So economists agree the cost of tariffs is largely paid for by a combination of the consumer and the company. And is the company willing to accept a lower profit margin to sell its products? A common estimate is that 30 to 50% of the cost is passed on to consumers, though the rate may be higher for products with fewer substitutions. So if you can't buy an equivalent product somewhere else, they may increase the price a little bit more.
Yeah, it's good old economics. We have to solve some of our own problems here in these United States. For instance, the deficit finally getting some attention that is needed for a very long time.
Right. So I have another question here. What is trade reciprocity and how will it unfold? Well, the concept of trade reciprocity is simple. We charge you the same tariffs that you charge us. The Trump administration aims to rebalance tariffs between the U.S. and other countries to make them reciprocal. Such a move bucks 75 years of multilateral U.S. trade policy. So this is a huge shift, 75-year shift of policy. And so the disruption, you can start to understand why there's so much disruption out there.
All right, Beth, we've got some interesting stats here this morning.
So this is kind of relevant to today, what we're going through. President Trump announced the 90-day pause on tariffs yesterday, with the exception of China, whose rate was increased to 125%. And how are the markets responding? And they are responding pretty well. The markets rallied, with NASDAQ and S&P 500 each closing up more than 9%, making the best day for stocks since 2008. And that is from Market Briefs.
Boy, the market was down more than 50% from October of 07 through March of 09.
Wow.
The worst decline goes all the way back to the Great Depression. Mm. That was brutal.
Wow.
So, yes, this has happened. Corrections do happen. Yeah. Go ahead, Beth, please.
Yeah. If you're thinking about selling your home, you may have wondered when the best time to sell is. According to Zillow, houses listed in May sell for $5,600 more on average than in other months.
Hmm. In the month of May.
So that's next month. So you got to jump on it.
That's
right.
If you want to ride the
it's
ride.
It's coming soon.
Yeah, for sure. And then we have this from Reuters. United Airlines has received approval from the Federal Aviation Administration for the first Starlink-equipped aircraft for commercial flights. United Airlines plans to add Elon Musk's Starlink to 300 planes by the end of this year.
Wow.
Isn't that amazing? Yeah. Starlink. Even having an impact on jet travel.
If flying isn't miraculous enough, now you have access to the Internet while you're up there full time.
Yeah, apparently so. Beautiful. Listen, whatever you want.
Yeah. All right. Well,
it's we're done here, are we not?
We are wrapping up. Yes, we are. Thanks to Dennis Prout, Heidi Cartwright, and Beth Shire in for New Retirement Radio on WTCM. ProutFinancialDesign.com.
Yes.
947-3992.
Correct.
Got it.